Hello and welcome to the Chris Allen podcast, brought to you in association with 101.8 WCRFM, Wolverhampton's local radio station. The Right Reverend Clive Gregory is stepping down as the Bishop of Wolverhampton after 16 years' service. It was great to be able to welcome him into our studios.
Thank you, Chris. It's good to be with you.
An easy or hard decision, a mix of emotions?
Yes, you got it. A mix of emotions, certainly, and not a straightforward decision, but actually a decision that's been some time in the making. So not a rushed or pressured kind of decision, just one that's gradually seemed to me to be the right one over a period of time after, as you might imagine, a lot of sort of prayerful discernment and talking to nearest and dearest and so forth.
Because you obviously could have stayed longer, you wouldn't have to retire and for another 9 years, I think, if my maths is right. But obviously you've got some plans for the future, so you think it's the right time to perhaps make a move?
Yes, I think of it not so much in terms of the age at which I'm retiring, which, as you suggest, you know, is a bit younger than perhaps would often be the case. But 16 years, as you mentioned, Chris, in this role is really quite a long stint. I think I will be the longest serving Bishop of Wolverhampton, for example. And it is a very arduous kind of role. I mean, it's a privilege and it's a joy in many respects. But senior leadership in any organisation comes with its pressures and its expectations. And I think 16 years is probably a fairly decent run at it.
You've been honest in the press release. I saw that, you know, that you've used the phrase onerous and complex and other people with different gifts. It's time for them to come in. And so I'm imagining from that over the 16 years, the role has probably changed quite a lot as well.
Yes, it's interesting actually to reflect, Chris, on my start in 2007, because the bishop that I succeeded, Bishop Mike, I don't think he spent a huge amount of time on emails, for example. I mean, he was a very busy and very active guy, I hasten to add, but I think he was still dictating his letters to his PA on a dictaphone most of the time. And so that's just one illustration, really, because you won't be surprised to hear that my inbox is sort of bombarded, really, morning, afternoon, and evening.
Sometimes as well, I know, I'm guilty of that one.
So there's that sense of one being more accessible,
yes,
and everyone feeling, and it's a good thing in many respects, of course, that they can have instant access, and they also, of course, generally speaking, want a pretty instant response, which is quite hard, really. I mean, I've got an excellent PA, but nevertheless, you know, one's out and about, one's seeking to meet people and travel a lot, you know, to meetings and further afield and so forth. And then you come back and, you know, there's a huge amount to sort of attend to in the office as well. So, yeah, so the pressure of email culture, I think, is one thing. Also, the Church of England has been on a real journey, and a very necessary and important one with regard to safeguarding, for example, and in various ways that I won't sort of bore you with. It has made much greater demands on senior leadership, really changing the culture within the Church of England. Not that we've done it on our own, but being part of a culture change to make us far more aware of the importance of safeguarding at all levels within the church. I mean, that's just one other example, really, of increased pressure on senior leadership.
Indeed. And for a while, you had the top job. You stood in as acting Bishop of Lichfield for a while as well. Was there even greater pressure at that time, or was it okay because, you know, someone's going to come along and rescue me at some point?
No, there was increased pressure, Chris. It was for about 15 months, actually, because Bishop Jonathan, the outgoing bishop, had been a bit poorly during his sort of last few months. And so I effectively, you know, stepped up at that point. And then there was about a year when we were waiting for Bishop Michael. And the thing, Chris, is, and you won't be surprised, or listeners probably either, that no one actually does the job that you're meant to be doing while you're actually doing someone else's job.
So no one's backfilling for you.
No one's backfilling. Thank you. That's the way to put it. So, no, it was a very demanding period. But I have to say that it was quite fun to do some new and different stuff that I wouldn't otherwise have had the opportunity to do. Had a lot more to do with the cathedral, for example, in Lichfield than I had done previously. And, yeah, so it was quite exciting and stimulating. But I wasn't at all sad to relinquish the reins after a year or so.
I'll take you back, if I may, back to where your faith comes from. Does it come from your family? Was it something that was a blinding light moment for you? Because in order to be ordained, then you obviously are following a particular path, but it must start with a faith within there somewhere.
Yes, indeed, Chris. Well, I owe a lot to my family in terms of my Christian formation, if I can put it like that, my Christian foundations, because both of my parents had a strong faith and a strong commitment to their local church. And so I grew up with church as a central part of our family life. And I joined the choir at a very early age in my local parish church. It wasn't too much of a hardship, even though we often were required to sing twice on a Sunday, morning and evening. It wasn't too much of a hardship because you got paid, you see, to sing at weddings. You got a little bit for just singing week by week on Sundays, but weddings were a real, money earner. So I don't think I was the only young person to be slightly swayed by the attraction of paid employment in the choir. But it was an important part of my life and remains an important part of my life. But I think I would say, Chris, that the call to ordination, which you also referenced there, was something quite different, quite distinct, because even though I'd been quite committed as a young person and through my teens as well, I developed a faith of my own. I hadn't actually thought about becoming a vicar. I can honestly say I hadn't ever thought of becoming a vicar. And then that was really a bit of a blinding light kind of moment, or at least a period of time over a few weeks, one summer holidays when I was a university student, doing some farm work actually, and the idea of going into the church just bugged me, I think is the best way to put it, bugged me continuously for a number of weeks. And I thought, I've got to talk to somebody about this, because I'm just sort of fed up with it going round and round in my head. And it did take me by surprise, and I half thought that the first person I spoke to, my local vicar, would say, well, Clive, it's an interesting idea, but
don't be so daft.
You're not quite the right sort. You're not quite dedicated enough, or we're looking for someone or people of a sort of different type. I was honestly, I'm not saying that out of some kind of false modesty, but I honestly was quite prepared for that. But I just felt I had
hopeful,
to talk about it.
That he might talk you out of it.
I think it was an element of that. I mean, I think I was very sort of 50-50, and in a way, I continued that way until the selection conference, as it was called, which sealed my fate.
Right.
And recommended me for training.
Yeah. And your career, you were ordained in Canterbury. You worked in Margate, a place I've been on holiday to many years ago, and also worked as a university chaplain, and then team rector in Coventry. And that all prepared you for Wolverhampton. How did that approach come? Is that a approach from the diocese, or is that one of the crown appointments in terms of who they say, Clive, we want you to be a bishop?
Mm. Well, I can only speak really from my experience, 16, 17 years ago, and things may have changed a little bit at any rate since then. But at that time, certainly, your bishop, my bishop in Coventry, was responsible, I think, for sort of recommending me for consideration as a bishop. I think that's the best way to put it.
Right.
And Bishop Jonathan of Lichfield was looking for an assistant bishop, suffragan bishop within the diocese. And so I guess my name was in a kind of pool of potential people. Right. And he invited me for interview, I think, perhaps with about three others. And you know, I was the one that he wanted to come and join him and his team. I think probably my experience as a vicar in the inner city of Coventry in Hillfields for 9 years was probably one reason why I was felt suitable for this particular role, because there are certain similarities really between Coventry and Wolverhampton and the sort of communities, multi-faith communities, areas of social deprivation, etc. So I think that may have been one of the reasons.
No, I was, that would seem to be that some of the experience you must have got in Coventry would prepare you for the diversity, I suppose, of Wolverhampton.
Yes.
And was Wolverhampton relatively new to you at that time? You didn't know the city that well. And I wonder what your first impressions were, if you could remember back then.
Well, Chris, I think I'd only been to Wolverhampton once before, or possibly twice. I say that because I remember coming to a concert at the Wolfram Hall, a pop concert with my wife. But now, of course, I also remember playing cricket in Wolverhampton against the clergy of the Lichfield Diocese when I was actually playing cricket for the Diocese of Coventry. So two occasions I've been to Wolverhampton, but nothing to do with the church, really, on either occasion.
And obviously very committed to the diverse aspects of the city as well, and showed opposition to the blue plaque that was intended to be put up in memory of Enoch Powell, and therefore, again, wanting to see cohesion across the city in many different ways and forms.
Yes, Chris, and you know, one of the privileges of my time as Bishop of Wolverhampton was that really from the beginning I was asked to take on the role of President of Interfaith Wolverhampton, an organisation which goes back to the time, or just after, of that speech, and indeed was formed quite largely as a response to that speech, and a real sense that people of different faiths across the city should come together to promote greater understanding and tolerance between communities, not only between faith communities, between all communities within the city, and to work really for peace and understanding. And by the time I arrived in 2007, Interfaith Wolverhampton, you know, had such a great track record really over several decades of being a positive, constructive influence within the city, involved in various campaigns, working with the city council in lots of different ways, really. And to be president has been a great privilege. And I felt, certainly as president of Interfaith Wolverhampton, that I needed to say something publicly when this proposal was mooted as a possibility. And so I did speak out against it, and I, and many other people, I think, as well, were really quite relieved when it didn't go forward.
And we've talked before about different people, different faiths, and you said to me before, actually, that sometimes people of other faiths get you and get your faith more because they are people of faith anyway. So when when is, you know, obviously we're celebrating Easter next week. It's Ramadan. It's Vaisakhi as well, coming along the road. So, but sometimes people of faith understand the faith in other people as well, and Interfaith Wolverhampton helps that understanding.
Yes, you put it very well, Chris, because that's certainly my lived experience, and many other people's too, is that once perhaps that initial barrier is penetrated, sort of barrier of often ignorance or just lack of understanding really of the different rituals, cultures, and indeed beliefs associated with a particular religion, once one decides to try and step across that barrier and open oneself up to learning about other faiths, then so often the result is actually one discovers so much in common, and actually conversations and working together are so much easier than one might possibly have imagined, really. And an example of that would be when I and a leading imam, Imam Rashid Raja, went into quite a lot of local primary schools and just talked about all that we got in common as Christian leader and as a Muslim leader in terms of our religion and ethics and the way that we believe people should treat one another, the way that they should lead their lives, the importance of prayer, etc. And that was a really good thing to be involved with, but it wasn't a difficult thing, really.
And do you think Wolverhampton's probably in a good position to lead the way on that and learning in other cities to come from there? Because, again, the city is very diverse and has had obviously come out of a difficult background with regard to going back 55 years ago now. So the city's been on this learning journey and therefore others can learn from Wolverhampton?
I would certainly say that. I think it's probably also important, though, Chris, to say that you know, this learning and the journey we've been on, it isn't something that we can take for granted or be complacent about or sort of assume we'll just continue on the same trajectory. I think it is really, really important that people of the next generation, generation beyond that, also will invest some time and energy into working together across the faith communities, because, you know, some of the founders of Interfaith Wolverhampton and indeed the people who've been involved over the decades, you know, it's time for them perhaps to lay aside their responsibility for this.
Indeed, and yes, I have the privilege of interviewing quite a number of them, and yes, it is about, I think, working that, perhaps getting around all those emails in order to be able to put the time in for such activity. Yeah. And for your successor, you know, if you were going to give some lessons to, you know, does your successor need a social media manager or something like that to help him or her focus on the pastoral matters of the role?
I think that's a brilliant idea, actually. And you did say earlier on in our conversation, Chris, that perhaps one of the reasons why I have stepped aside was to allow somebody to come in with different gifts, different experience, different areas of interest. And I think the next Bishop of Wolverhampton, without any doubt, will be more active on social media, for example, than I have been, and probably will be more alive, I think, to opportunities to engage across the generations, which of course implies the use of social media.
And we're all struggling with that one. So we might have to double up on that one, I think, probably.
Okay, well, if you say so. But yeah, there are great opportunities to be taken there. Yeah,
and looking at the church moving forward, I know, you know, you remain a priest in the church, and you'll no doubt officiate moving forward as well. But in terms of the, if I might put, the professional side of the church and your hopes, yes, what do you see as the positives and perhaps some of the barriers it's going to have to struggle with?
The pandemic was a tough time for the church, as it was for all of us as individuals and as organisations. And yet, I think many, many churches during the pandemic performed a really, really important role in terms of supporting their local communities and indeed individuals within those communities. And also they developed, in many cases, you know, a very strong online presence, which has in many cases continued in terms of online services being offered, for example. So I'm quite encouraged, really, by the way in which churches have proved their adaptability in ways that I might not have necessarily predicted. I'm also quite encouraged by the fact that after an initial sense coming out of the pandemic that the churches were weakened, then a year or two on now, there are many instances, really, of people coming back to church and people trying it for the first time and so forth. So there's more strength, perhaps, than there was a year or two ago, which is also good. But to be honest and to be realistic, the Church of England will not have as many churches in the future as it does now. The map of this country is, of course, changing all the time. It doesn't mean necessarily that Christianity is fading away. I'm struck, Chris, by the number of new Christian congregations across the city, often reflecting migration patterns into the city. It's just that, you know, the Church of England will not need as many church buildings. And that's partly about need, but it's also about the cost of maintaining very expensive buildings and also the clergy to work in them. But I'm still positive, really. It just means that we will have to rethink our presence, and we may well concentrate more on a certain number of churches which are resourced better and hopefully can serve their communities in a really effective way. But also we must look to continue to be a presence in other areas, on estates and other areas where we may not necessarily be able to afford to have a church, or there may not be a church, new housing estates as well. But how can we be church in those areas? And it may well be smaller groups of believers meeting in one another's homes, which, of course, Chris, is how the church started 2,000 years ago. So there's no reason to be gloomy or despondent. But I think we have to be up for change and not just clinging on to exactly the church as it has been.
Indeed. I can't let you go without mentioning the cricket, because we encountered each other. I think you were usually the winner on those occasions as well. But again, you've taken time to obviously have a life outside of around the church as well. But also, I should imagine those kind of informal interactions with colleagues were also very important to you, as well as the fun of playing.
Yes, very much so. Very much so, actually. Being part of the Lichfield Diocesan cricket team was a source of great fun, great refreshment. And as anybody who's a kind of sporting person will know, if you're a sporting person, you need to play sport. And, you know, the competitive aspect is important as well. And I think clergy cricket, it's just a great blend, really, of fun and playing the game in the right spirit. But also, you know, we were playing in a competition every year, a national competition, and we were very excited to actually win it one year for the first and probably the last time in Lichfield's history. And to be part of that team and the camaraderie and the dressing room spirit was really good for me, actually. And good to relate to fellow clergy other than in meetings wearing my purple shirt, you know, as the bishop. Just let our hair down together. In fact, we had a great final meal together a week or so ago, a curry together. And there was a lot of laughter.
That sounds good. Now, obviously, you've got to, you'll be moving home. Where will you end up? Which part of the country? Are you staying local or going further afield?
No, we're not staying local, and that's no reflection on Wolverhampton, where we've been really happy. We've loved living in Wolverhampton for 16 years as a family. But our children are grown up now, they're young adults, and it's not the done thing, Chris, to actually retire in the area where you've already served as bishop. So in a sense, we had to move further away. But that's fine, because we love the north and the northwest in particular. Mm. And so we're going to be going to live in Lancaster, which is a town with which we have some family associations through going to university. And so it'll be in some ways quite fresh ground, but it's a beautiful part of the world, and I don't think we'll be bored, and there'll be plenty to get stuck into.
And I'm sure people will soon sign you up if you're not very careful as well. We do wish you the very best of you, Jenny, the cat, which you mentioned, key part of your household when we chatted at Christmas. And to say, you know, you've got lots of thank yous, but thank you on behalf of WCRFM for being here, being involved with us, being there at the drop of a hat, you know, like when Her Majesty passed away, to come and give a tribute there on behalf of the church, which is appropriate to do. But we do thank you and wish you every blessing moving forward.
Thank you so much, Chris. That means a lot to me. And I've always really, really enjoyed coming into the studio, talking with you on many different sorts of occasions. for many different purposes, but it's always been, you know, a really positive experience. I think this community radio station is so important for the city, and I just wish the station, you know, all the best for the future. I'm sure you've got an increasing role to play in the city, so all the best to you too.
Thank you. That was the Right Reverend Clive Gregory, the Bishop of Wolverhampton, now retired from that particular post. We wish him the very best, and Jenny and the cat, as they move up to Lancaster, and we look forward to catching up with his successor whenever that appointment is made in the future. And thank you for your company on this podcast. For the podcast at WCRFM, just go to wcrfm.com and look at the podcast on the drop-down menu, and you'll be able to see what we've got on offer there for you.